how have we seen this verdict of not being guilty by reason of mental illness impact some of the victims we might see in certain cases? How does this impact?
Well, how does any crime impact victims? It's probably very varied and depends very much upon the victim. Different victims react to things in different ways. And I have to say, I've been involved in numerous criminal trials. It's not uncommon that when things are all over, no matter what happens, whether the person is guilty or not guilty or goes to jail or doesn't, that the victims don't feel completely satisfied and resolved. I mean, that's to be expected. These are horrendous crimes with terrible harms.
So is there a need for some responsibility to be taken, even in cases where, well, the situation has occurred, they are essentially not responsible, not considered responsible, due to things that they themselves are going through in terms of mental illness?
Well, look, what the New South Wales government is talking about is really just a superficial change. It wouldn't change anything in practice substantially. It's just a name change. And this goes back, you have to understand that the principles of criminal responsibility in our system, which are ancient, say that if you are, for example, a child, you lack the ability to commit a crime, right, because you lack capacity, what's called capacity. At the other end of life, if you have dementia or Alzheimer's, you might lack capacity to commit a crime and you can't be responsible. And the third category is people who suffer from mental illness that is such that after having heard from experts give evidence, psychiatrists give evidence, a judge or a jury are satisfied that the mental illness was such that the person should not be held responsible for their actions. That's why we use the term not guilty, because they're held to be incapable of committing a crime and therefore cannot be guilty. They cannot be guilty because they could not form the requisite mental state or intention in order to commit the offence.
So even if this was just a change on the face of it without, you know, getting into, the associated consequences otherwise, is there a real indication of what the government, what our system might actually change that verdict to?
No, I haven't seen any specific proposal. I mean, you could change it to...
I believe we're back on with Andrew. Andrew, are you with us?
Yes, I am. My apologies. I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah, not quite sure ourselves. These things do happen. I just wanted to follow up on your article, Fairness, Justice and Repairing Environmental Harm. You talked about how the New South Wales Land and Environment Court is in need of a change in sentencing practice. Can you tell us the procedure you made when determining what needed to be changed or better evaluated?
Well, the issue is that, look, it stems from basically a good thing, which is that in the New South Wales Land and Environment Court, they have special sentencing powers for environmental crimes that allow them to impose sentences that are different to normal crimes like assault or murder and so on. And these are things such as an order to require the offender to put good the harm, to restore the environment, to clean up the creek or to grow back the bushland and so on. These are good things. It's a good idea. It's a good idea. The problem that it creates is that our system takes consistency in sentencing very seriously, that people who commit similar crimes should be punished similarly, and also the idea of proportionality, that the punishment should fit the crime. The problem is that with some of these new novel penalties, that it can be very difficult to work out what they will cost the offender in dollar terms or in time, and therefore very difficult to come up with sentences that are both consistent and proportionate. So my article is really trying to explore that and to suggest ways that we might be able to improve the system further to make sure that the sentences imposed are consistent with how we view sentencing should happen.
And as a previous solicitor in private practice criminal defence, were there other sort of examples you came across where the law seemed uneven or unjust in ways that needed fixing?
Well, how long have you got? look, back on the topic we started on, our criminal justice system really struggles with people who suffer from mental illness, with accused who suffer from mental illness, which is quite a high percentage of people who are charged with crimes. Lawyers at law school get no training in mental illness. I wasn't trained. Judges and magistrates often get no particular training, but then we're sent out and we represent clients who are mentally ill. It can be very challenging. But also, if the person reason why the person is offending, if the underlying cause of the offending behaviour is mental illness, then the offending, logically, is not likely to stop until the mental illness is addressed. The criminal justice system is not well placed to tackle that. It's not a hospital. It doesn't employ psychiatrists. It can send people away on orders to say that you must be sent to a mental hospital for a period of time, but that's about the best they can do. So you can get multiple, or you can get certainly instances of individual injustice in those cases where somebody really isn't responsible for their actions at times because of their mental illness, but ends up being punished anyway because they just seem too dangerous to let them out into society, and nobody really knows what else to do with these people.
Mm. Well, it is, unfortunately, it is a very thorny one. I do appreciate you joining us on this morning and sort of unpacking for us a little bit this morning.
Always happy to talk about criminal law.